Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another edition of What's Cooking on a beautiful afternoon here in the UK. Yep, I think spring has finally sprung, and we're all looking forward to some warmer and pleasanter weather. I hope you're all well and ready to enjoy another food-packed show, because that's what it's going to be, so we'd better get on. What's cooking today then? Well, with Easter just around the corner, I thought we would talk about some of the foods that are eaten around this time of year. And also, of course, later on, I'll be cooking a recipe. But there are indeed some special foods eaten around Easter time. Easter cakes and Easter breads. And one of the most famous of these, of course, is the hot cross bun. Traditionally eaten here in the UK on Good Friday, probably for breakfast, but any time of day really. And to be honest, these buns are a nice treat at any time of year. These are yeast dough buns with currants and raisins in them, and also some nice spices too. And they were eaten all year round in pagan pre-Christian times, with the bun representing the moon and the four seasons, the four quarters. Christians took over this tradition and changed the meaning so that the cross represented the cross on which Jesus died. Another food traditionally eaten in the UK around Easter time is simnel cake. This is a rich fruit cake covered with a layer of marzipan, and there are 11 marzipan balls put around the top of the cake to represent the 11 faithful disciples of Jesus. The cake also has a layer of marzipan in the middle. Simnel cake is traditionally eaten on Mothering Sunday, which here in the UK is always on the middle Sunday of Lent, and was often made by servant girls to take home to their mothers. Other countries, of course, have special foods that are eaten around this time of year. In Italy, for example, salty pretzels are traditionally eaten around Easter time. And in Russia, small pancakes called blinis, topped with a mixture of anchovies, cream, soft cream, dried fruit and orange peel, called pasca, are eaten. In Greece, a traditional Easter cake is made containing oranges and almonds, and it's eaten with a spicy orange sauce poured over it. A popular food for Easter dinner, particularly in Europe and America, is ham, and apparently in pre-Christian times the pig was considered to be a symbol of good luck. Of course, in many places the main dish of the Easter meal is lamb, and corresponding to the Passover and to Christ, the Lamb of God, lamb has become a central symbol of Easter. And certainly in the UK and Europe is now the time of year when fresh spring lamb is coming onto the market. So, no prizes for guessing what we're actually going to be cooking today. Yep, you guessed it. A nice roast leg of lamb with garlic and rosemary. And
this is what you do.
Well, here we are once again in the kitchen. And in front of me on the counter, I have my lamb. Now, the recipe that will be on our website indicates a 2 kilo leg of lamb, which is about 4.5 pounds of meat. Well, that's quite a lot of meat and far too much for Wally and myself, as we're the only people eating dinner here today. So I'm going to be using just under 1 kilo of lamb.
So I will be halving the ingredients of the rosemary and garlic butter. But of course, if you're using the recipe on the site and using a 2 kilo leg of lamb, you'll want the ingredients that are there. But you can chop and change these to suit whatever size piece of lamb you have. Now remember when you're buying lamb that the bigger the piece of lamb you buy, the bigger the bone. And particularly with lamb leg, you're going to have quite a big piece of bone. And this piece here has got rather a chunky bone in it. And so it's still perhaps a little bit more than we would need. So you might want a little bit more than you would need. Okay. What I have also here in front of me for the garlic and rosemary butter is 2 large garlic cloves, 10 grams, which is about 1/2 ounce of butter, 3 rosemary stalks, and I'm also going to season with some salt and freshly ground black pepper. So what I'm going to do to begin with is to make the rosemary and garlic butter. And what we need to do to begin with is to grate the garlic very finely into a small bowl. And to do this, I'm using a hand grater. If you have attachments for a food processor or an electric grater, you can obviously use that. But I'm using a hand grater, which is a little tricky, but perfectly possible. So just finely grating the garlic now into the bowl. Smells good. Cloves getting a little bit smaller now, so a little tricky to hold, but nearly there. And just make sure that all the garlic is free from the grater. Tap the grater on the bowl, or tap it with your hands. And even I'm going to put my hands up inside this grater and just scoop out the garlic, as some of it has actually got stuck. There we are. Into the bowl it goes. And that's the garlic grated. Next, I'm going to add the butter. This is softened, unsalted butter. And actually, this is very, very soft. So, should make a nice paste. And there we are. Next, I'm going to add the rosemary leaves. So, what I'm going to do is strip these from the stalk, or stalks, should I say. And the recipe on the website will indicate that you should chop these. Well, these are very small. So basically, I'm just going to tear these very finely and add them to the garlic and the butter. Now, rosemary is quite a strong flavoured herb. And you may not want to use as much as the recipe indicates. Obviously, it's up to you. But do remember that it is quite a strong flavoured herb. Very nice flavour, though. One more stalk of rosemary to sort out. Into the bowl. Like so. There we are. And that's the rosemary in. Next, we're going to add the seasoning. So just a little salt. And some freshly ground black pepper. Smells good already. There. And what I'm going to do now is, with a fork, just mash up these ingredients into a paste. So, mashing together the butter, the garlic, the rosemary, and the seasoning into a soft paste. There we are. Next, we are going to make some holes in the lamb. And this is so that we can massage the paste into the lamb later. Now, this is a little bit tricky, and I'm using a metal skewer to do this. You could also use a very thin knife if you wish. And what I do is I place my fingertip where I'm going to make the hole and just press down very slightly so you've got a little bit of a dent in the meat, and place the skewer just by your finger, move the fingertip away and press down, making lots of little holes in the meat so that we can make sure that the paste gets into these and the flavour of the garlic and rosemary. Oops, that was rather a big hole. The flavour of the garlic and rosemary spreads through the meat. Now, this could take a little bit of time, and as I say, it's a little bit tricky. And certainly if you're using a 2 kilogram leg of lamb, it says to make between 30 and 50 holes. Well, I'm not going to make that many. Possibly about 20. Next, I'm going to massage the rosemary and garlic butter into the meat. And you'll hear in the background that I've switched on the oven, all ready to heat up to temperature while I'm doing this. So we're massaging this into the meat. Just scrape it out of the bowl there. And try to work some of it into the holes that you've made in your meat. Work it in nice and well. Just scrape some more of this out of the bowl. Actually smells delicious. Although the meat isn't cooking yet, I can sort of smell all the flavours, and it smells lovely. And you may find that your leg of lamb is held together by a string, which you will need to be careful of. Ours has a couple of bits of string at least. So just working the rosemary and garlic butter well into the meat, all over, and as much as possible, try to work it into the holes that you've made. That's going in nicely. So now we've worked the rosemary and garlic butter into the meat, you might want to wash your hands because it's rather messy, and that's exactly what I'm going to do. And I must admit, it's quite difficult to get buttery sort of paste off hands, so what I'm going to do is dry with a little bit of kitchen towel. And as I said, the oven is already switched on and heating up to temperature. And the temperature you'll need for this is 200 degrees C, which is 400 degrees F. Okay, so that's hands washed. And do remember that when you have been handling raw meat, it is very important when you've finished handling the meat to wash your hands very, very thoroughly. You know, we don't want any tummy upsets or nasty bugs, so there goes the oven up to temperature. No, we don't want any tummy upsets or nasty bugs, so do remember to wash your hands very, very thoroughly when handling raw meat. I'm sure you all know that anyway, but it doesn't hurt to remind you. So, oven up to temperature, and this recipe also has an accompanying red wine gravy, which we're not actually going to make today, although I will be giving you the recipe for that shortly. Right, the meat's now ready to go into the oven. So I'm going to carry this over to my roasting tin and place inside and cover loosely with foil. Just wrap around the meat and fold over any excess foil. Incidentally, when I was researching for this show, I discovered a lovely recipe that the Greeks make. Apparently, they make a soup out of lamb's stomach, which they eat on Easter morning, and then they roast the rest of the lamb for later. Perhaps we should have made the soup instead of this roast lamb. What do you think? I'm sensing somewhere that somebody is thinking, not likely. There. So that is the meat nicely covered. And we're going to pop this into the oven for 30 minutes. After which time, we're going to take out the joint, take off the foil, and then put back in the oven for between 50 and 60 minutes. Now, this will give the meat a medium cook, so you may want to cook it for a little longer. That is entirely up to you, depending on how you like your meat. Now, the best way I find to test whether my meat is cooked is to use a meat fork. And what I do is I stick the fork into the meat, and if it goes in very easily without any real resistance and also comes out easily and is clean, then my meat is cooked. I'm sure you have other ways of testing your meat, and if you do, why don't you let us know about them? I'll be telling you how later on in the programme. But that is the way I do it. Some people use skewers, some people have food thermometers, but the way I've just described has always worked well for me. So that's the lamb in the oven, and red wine gravy recipe coming up.
You're listening to the Global Voice.
if you would like to make the red wine gravy, here's how. You will need 125 ml or 4.5 fluid ounces of red wine, one small knob of butter, and an equal amount of plain flour. Heat a heavy-based frying pan on the hob, and when hot, carefully pour the juices from the roasting tin into the pan. Now, I do mean careful, because this may splash, so please, please do be very careful when pouring the juices from the tin. Then add the red wine. Turn the heat down and leave the sauce to reduce. And meanwhile, mix together the flour and butter in a clean bowl to form a paste. This is to thicken the sauce. Add about a teaspoon of this, or as much as you think you will need to get the sauce to the required consistency. To serve, slice the lamb, pour over the gravy, and garnish with a couple of stalks of rosemary. Next, here's a recipe for the famous hot cross buns I mentioned earlier. And for the buns, you will need 625 grams or 1.3 pounds of strong white flour, plus extra for dusting. 1 teaspoon of salt, 2 teaspoons ground mixed spice, 45 grams or 1.5 ounces of unsalted butter cut into cubes, plus extra butter for greasing, 85 grams or 3 ounces of sugar, the zest of 1 lemon, 1.5 teaspoons of fast action yeast, 1 free range egg, 275 ml or 10 fluid ounces tepid milk, 125 grams, 4 ounces of mixed dried fruit. And for the topping, 2 tablespoons plain flour, vegetable oil for greasing, 1 tablespoon golden syrup, gently heated for glazing. And here's what you do. Sieve the flour, salt, and ground mixed spice into a large mixing bowl, then rub in the butter with your fingertips. Make a well in the centre of the mixture and add the sugar, lemon zest, and yeast. Beat the egg and add to the flour with the tepid milk. Mix together to form a soft, pliable dough. Turn out the dough onto a lightly floured surface and work in the dried fruit carefully. Knead the dough for 5 minutes or until smooth and elastic. Grease a large, warm mixing bowl with butter. Shape the dough into a ball and add to the prepared bowl. Then cover with a tea towel or dishcloth and set aside for 1 hour to prove. Turn out the proved dough onto a lightly floured surface and knock back the dough. Shape the dough into a ball and return to the bowl. Cover with the tea towel and set aside for a further 30 minutes for the dough to rise. Turn out the dough onto a lightly floured surface and divide into 12 equal pieces. Roll each piece into a ball, then flatten slightly and shape into a bun with the palm of your hands. Grease a baking tray with butter and transfer the buns to the tray. Wrap the tray containing the buns loosely in greaseproof paper and place inside a polythene bag. Preheat the oven to 240°C, that's 475F, gas 8. Meanwhile, for the topping, mix the plain flour with 2 tablespoons of cold water. When the buns have risen, remove the polythene bag and greaseproof paper. Spoon the flour mixture into a piping bag and pipe across on each bun. Now, this is quite tricky if you can't see what you're doing, but I have done it. It took me a very long time, but it can be done. Transfer the buns to the oven and bake for 8 to 12 minutes or until pale golden brown. As soon as the buns are removed from the oven, brush with the hot golden syrup and place on a wire rack to cool. Last month I spoke a little about chopping vegetables and mentioned one or two gadgets that you can buy if you don't feel safe chopping with a knife, and indeed I demonstrated to you how I get along with chopping vegetables. But of course you may not feel safe with knife or one of the fancy gadgets that are around these days, and if this is the case you can always buy prepared vegetables at your supermarket. These are vegetables that will have been washed and chopped for you, so no chopping needed at all. You can also buy baby vegetables, which gives you no reason to chop. And I've heard from Lee, who says she often does just that, and she will often use baby carrots and grape tomatoes, so no chopping. But when she does chop vegetables, she has a Kevlar fishing glove, which she says protects straying fingers from the blade. And although you will feel the blade through the glove, you won't chop your fingers off. What a great idea. If you'd like to contact the programme with tips and hints, ideas for the show, give us some feedback, your cooking experiences, favourite recipes, you can do so in the usual way by emailing cooking@theglobalvoice.info. That's cookin@theglobalvoice.info. If you'd like to hear this show again, go to theglobalvoice.info/gallery or visit incx.org/whatscooking, where you can download our podcast or browse through our recipe pages. And all recipes that I've given you today will be on the website very shortly. Well, that's all for this month, I'm afraid. I hope you've enjoyed the show as much as I have, and that you'll join me next time. So, until I'm with you again, take care of yourselves and each other, and as always, happy cooking!